Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
Welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM, where you speak your mind. Carrie Vina Company going all the way to 6 p.m. We're going to be having a discussion, an important interview with an important person. We're going to be discussing World Down Syndrome Day. Rock your socks. You remember every year, at some point in time in March, of course, and we all wear these cute, beautiful socks in commemoration of the World Down Syndrome Day. You remember, right? So with me, I have today Mr. Glenn Niles. Now, he's the chairman and the founder of Down Syndrome Family Network. He's the father of Tyree Sion Niles, a 24-year-old man with Down Syndrome, with four other parents of children with Down Syndrome. He founded the Down Syndrome Family Network. Now, their mandate is to advocate for the value, acceptance, and inclusion of people with Down Syndrome. They assist families with the access to resources, support, and information they may need to help their children live full and active lives in an inclusive society. Now, in 11 years, the network has hosted annual international conferences, free quarterly family workshops with presentations to parents and other professional attendees, and skills training sessions for the self-advocates, and the largest inclusive event in the Caribbean. That's called the Body Walk. Now, the Down Syndrome Family Network received an award from the Down Syndrome International UK in 2014, the President's Award from the National Down Syndrome Congress, that is in the USA, that was in 2016, and the Points of Light Award from Her Majesty the Queen as Head of the Commonwealth. Let me introduce Mr. Niles. Hi, and welcome.
Hi, Carrie. Welcome to me. Yeah, thank you for you letting me come on board the station.
Mm-hmm.
Hello to Trinidad and Tobago. Looking
Everybody.
Forward to hey, you all sending all your questions, right? I intend to just sit down here and talk, right?
But don't worry, I have some questions for you. Of course, we're going to keep the lines open as well. Now, we have news at 4, so we'll have news and then we'll jump straight back into our interview. But let's jump right into it. Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. So, let's start. Can you tell us about your journey as a father of a child with Down Syndrome and how it led you to start the Down Syndrome Family Network?
Oh, my God, Carrie.
Yeah.
You start hitting hard one time.
One time.
Yeah. Let me see if I have my handkerchief. Because everybody knows when I start this story, sometimes I start to tear up, right?
Mm.
But when my son was born, that was it. That's what started everything. You know, they always say, who feels it knows it, right?
Yeah.
So I never really knew anybody that I could remember, you know, with Down Syndrome, any friends who had any children with Down Syndrome, autism, any kind of disability.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some work with children from Princess Elizabeth Home and Lady Ho Choi Home,
mm-hmm,
while I was in Defense Force, you know, teaching them about health and fitness and giving them some exercises. And that was about it. That was about the interaction.
Yeah.
You know, so when my son was born and I realized he had Down Syndrome, you know, it's like my world ended there, partially mentally, physically, like everything. It was a serious blow to me, because not knowing what caused Down Syndrome, what it was about, where the hell it came from,
mm-hmm,
you know, and that's what made it even more difficult, you know, being in that ignorant state.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because then you start to think about all the myths, all the things people say, sins of the father fall on the children and all kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking about all of that and wondering how much of that is relevant to what's going on with us now.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it took me a while to process everything and then started to think, oh, well, he has Down Syndrome. I remember what the kids we worked with at Lady Ho Choi, some of them were Special Olympians and things. So,
mm-hmm,
I said, well, I'm into physical fitness and Defense Force. Well,
yeah, you might as well.
You're going to be the best Special Olympian, right? You'll be the best athlete. And I started to work towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 days after, you know, just when my mind is starting to get comfortable,
mm-hmm,
we found out that he had trios in his heart.
Oh.
You know, so I'm like, what the hell, God? You know, he is born with Down syndrome. Now he has 3 holes in his heart. There's a test. you know, why me? Kind of thing.
Wow.
And you remember when, you know, the putting Job through all his trials and
yeah.
like, boy, tell curse God and die, yes? Because it's almost like, what next?
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, at that point in time, there's no way you're considering, hey, things could be worse. Still give thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, I'm not thinking about that then.
No.
As far as I'm concerned, things can't get no worse than
no
this.
Worse. Oh,
I thought then was bad enough that he had Down syndrome and now he had 3 holes in his heart. And he'll possibly die if we didn't get surgery on time. So, you know, we're a young couple. We don't have the money. Trying to figure out how this thing going to work out. I had one of my friends, she attended Howard University. So she reached out to some of the people in her cohort, you know, in the medical field, and told them, hey, I have a friend, his son was born with Down syndrome and congenital heart disease, you know, if they know about any options, you know, that they could explore. And they responded and told her that Rotary International had what was called a Gift of Life program, and they would do the surgery, everything for free, and pre-care and aftercare, you know. So we got in touch with them, and they responded. They asked us for all the medical information. We went to our pediatric cardiologist down there in Trinidad, and we sent all the information to them on a VHS tape.
Back then.
You know, and all and the files with everything, and they accepted this case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so they went up. All we had to do was pay airfare, and they paid for everything else. One member paid for the surgery, another member kept them at his home, you know, before, the months before and after the surgery. And I thought that was amazing to me that these strangers, complete strangers, you know, would do that for my son.
Wow.
You know, that was incredible.
Wow.
And further to that, he came back and he started to thrive because he was born very robust. And of course, we had to wait 6 months to go for the surgery. So he basically really started to shrink away because of the problem with his heart. But after the surgery and he came back, he started to put on a lot of weight.
He bounced back up.
Right back up.
Nice.
So then the next issue now would be, what is his future going to be like? Right? Because they told us all the things that he would never be able to do. You know, oh, your son have Down syndrome, so he mightn't walk, he mightn't talk, but I can't remember all the might not. I didn't hear not one person really telling me that, hey,
what do you
he will have a normal
do?
Life.
Yeah.
All you have to do is this.
Mm-hmm.
And provide this for him and teach him. Nobody said that. So I basically was thinking that he would be under my care until I die, until he dies. And he will never be able to function and take care of himself.
Yeah.
You know, so that is the vision I had for my son going forward.
Yeah.
So you know how that would have been.
Yeah. Now I know some of us know what is Down syndrome and some of us don't. But let me just tell you, now Down syndrome is a disorder that occurs when there is a duplication of the 21st chromosome. It affects approximately about 6,000 babies at birth every year. Now, so on March 21st, a date chosen to represent the chromosomal defection found in Down syndrome, the 21st day of the third month, which it would be tomorrow, we would celebrate World Down Syndrome Day, and an event created to raise public awareness, promote inclusivity, encourage advocacy, and support the well-being of those living with Down syndrome. And hearing your story, Niles, it's mind-opening, it's mind-blowing, because you don't hear these stories so often. You don't hear these stories. But how has the Down Syndrome Family Network impacted the lives of families and individuals with Down Syndrome in Trinidad and Tobago?
All right, well, I'll have to tell you how we came up with the network in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just as I said, like how you mentioned, I didn't know what caused Down syndrome, right?
Yeah.
So doing research, found out it's not my fault. It's not my wife's fault. It's not their grandparents' fault. It was no sin that happened in the ancestors
and
before.
Yeah.
And it fall on the children. It was no drug that we took or anything. All the things that you hear people say, right? it just happens.
Yeah.
Across creed, class, status, whatever. That's why all of them resemble. And that's why, they, you know, they would call them God's children, because regardless of what race, they all have a similar look.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So in looking for that information, I came across the National Down Syndrome Congress that's based in Atlanta in the U.S. and the National Down Syndrome Society based in New York. And I started to follow them. So the Congress has a conference every year. So I went to this conference, and that was the catalyst. That's what blew everything open, because when I went to the conference, I met people with Down syndrome who I could talk to just how I'm speaking to you.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to speak slowly. I didn't have to use sign language and gestures and things, and I could speak to them, and they would respond in kind. I went liming with them. We went out to dinner. We went to the bar. It was crazy. You know, I had to really force myself to continue speaking to them and not just stand there with my mouth open, thinking this person has Down syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, and what I realized is that all of them who were so, for I hate to use this word, but it's a word they use to describe them, high functioning, were all products of an inclusive society, meaning that they went to an inclusive, they went through an inclusive educational system. They were not segregated. They did not go to special schools, and they were functioning in a society that embraced them, that included them. So they were working. Some of them were living in assisted living homes where there's like a monitor living in the building who would check on them.
Right.
And some of them were living independently.
Oh.
They were driving on their own.
Really?
They were working. Some were married. I mean, it was amazing.
Like a regular, normal life.
Yeah. So, you know, coming from Trinidad, where I see nothing even close to that happening.
Mm.
You know, I was like, okay, so why is this? How is this possible? Why are our children so far behind in this process?
Yeah.
And it really is because of us.
Mm.
You know, we keep them behind, because we do everything for them. We treat them special. We don't think that they could learn. We don't think that they could function, and we don't allow them to. So we're really not giving them the opportunity. So, you know, me with all this newfound wisdom, I came back and got in touch with some other parents and say, hey, our children could go to regular schools. They could get jobs. They could get married. And all of them looking at me like, Glenn tripping off. You know, our children with Down syndrome, he's talking about, that could never happen. You know, but I saw it. I spend time with them, and every year I go back to the conference, and I keep telling parents, hey, you all need to attend this conference. You know, it's like you need to remove the blinders and open up your eyes to the reality. This is what's going on in the world, and we had to play catch up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I decided that we should form an organization that would try to do the same, kind of emulate the Congress and the National Down Syndrome Society and offer that support to persons with children with Down syndrome and other disabilities living here in Trinidad. And we did that by forming the Down Syndrome Family Network.
Wow.
Right? And since then, our mandate is to lobby for inclusion for persons with Down syndrome and other disabilities.
Mm.
That is our main focus, as, you know, to advocate for, and as activists for, the human rights of persons with disabilities, because that is where it starts. You know, their rights are being infringed by them not being allowed to be educated. If they can't be educated, they can't be integrated.
Mm-hmm.
So you are basically segregating them for the rest of their lives, where society doesn't know them, they don't know society. People don't even know the difference between Down syndrome and autism.
And autism, because I was coming to that, because a lot of us, we see or we class all as the same, when it's not the same.
It's not everybody with Down syndrome is not the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like us. Just how we are different, we have different personalities, and you'll hear all the myths. Oh, those children with Down syndrome, they're so loving, eh? They're so cute. They're just like everybody else. So you catch them on a bad day, they will be as loving.
They will be as loving. Because look, someone just sent a message. She said, hey, I love this topic. Bring about awareness in Trinidad about Down syndrome. They're the most loving and happy children. And many of them are quite gifted and talented. They are fun to have around. Yeah. Just like what you just see.
Yeah. they are gifted and talented once they are given the opportunity.
Opportunity to be so.
To be so. There you go.
And that is it. I mean, when you had to go outside to learn this new culture with regards to Down syndrome persons, because we don't have that. We don't hear about those things down here, you know?
Yeah, we don't. And it's only since we formed the network, you know, because we'd always be telling parents, well, inclusion begins at home.
Mm-hmm.
You need to stop doing everything for your child. You know, don't let them at 6, 7, 8 years old sit on the floor to eat in a bowl with a spoon. Mm. No.
Let them sit on by the table.
Exactly. Start teaching them the right things early. And once you do that, you will see how they will learn. Yeah. You know, my son was eating with a knife and fork by the time he was 5 years old.
What?
And even though he's a left-hander, I don't know how that happened, because his mom is right-handed, I'm right-handed. So it's not to say he saw us using our left hand. He just naturally uses his left hand.
On his own.
Yeah, so there were times I would take the pen and take it out of his left hand, put it back in the right, and he would just put it back in his left hand.
Because he's his own person, he's his own being.
Yeah, and that was when he was just like 3 years old.
Wow. And that is the regular age for a normal child to start, you know, getting involved in doing work and learning certain stuff. Right. But that's really
great. And he just
naturally
did that. You know, so getting the parents first to understand that and to start working with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some parents who were doing this very successfully, but nobody knew about it.
Right.
So we have, like, young adults with Down syndrome who do all the cooking, cleaning, everything at home because they never went to school.
Yeah.
And they never went to work. So they're just at home.
Yeah.
But they're not at home doing nothing.
Mm.
You know, they learn to cook, clean. They could go in the parlor by the corner and, you know, and buy stuff and collect the right change, you know, and things like that.
Mm.
So, but it's just we don't hear these stories.
Yeah.
You know, so some parents did it. And we have the parents who didn't.
Yeah.
Who have the children that are still very dependent on them.
Mm-hmm. Guys, it's just about 3:59. We have to jump straight into the news. When we come back, we are going to be continuing our discussion about World Down Syndrome Day, the Down Syndrome Family Network with Mr. Nels.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back to Freedom 106.5 FM, where you speak your mind at just about 6 minutes after 4. And before the news, we are discussing World Down Syndrome Day, Rock Your Socks, which is happening tomorrow, Tuesday, 21st of March. And with me, I have Glenn Niles. He's the chairman and the founder of Down Syndrome Family Network. Welcome back, Niles. I like calling you Niles.
Hey, that's okay. That's part of the name.
Part of your name, right? Let's jump straight back into the interview. Now, can you share some of the challenges families with Down syndrome children face in your community?
All right. Well, one of the things we try to use people first language. So instead of saying Down syndrome children, you say children with Down syndrome or adults with Down syndrome or with autism or with cerebral palsy. You know, say, see the person first and not their so-called disability.
Yeah.
Right. There are several challenges. We start with what I mentioned before by us being a segregated society based on that charity model of taking care of people with disabilities.
Mm.
We have not yet adopted the social model, which is the more common practice now in developing countries, where they are accepted into society.
Right.
You know, we are still quite prepared to give them the handouts and put them in the box, and no matter how pretty the box is, it's still a box.
Yeah.
And segregating them and keeping them separate.
Mm.
You know, so that is one of the main challenges. And as I said, this challenge actually starts in the home as well. So even though it's a challenge for the parents, they perpetuate it.
Mm.
You know, because of course, like me, they don't know better and think they are doing the best for their child.
Right.
You know, so is those, as I said, there are those who saw not to do that and saw to teach and empower them instead. And it's difficult.
Yeah.
I didn't say it was easy, but now I'm happy where I could look back and I could watch my son playing his video games and tell him, yo, Tyrese, go and mow the lawn for my brother.
Hmm.
And he will look at me You know, you must get a little attitude.
Well, yeah.
Big man watching a playing my game and winning, whether it's FIFA, football, NBA or something. And yeah, God, Dad, all right, okay. Put on the game, take off the television, then go get the lawnmower, check the gas, top it up, and cut the lawn.
And he will do all that.
Yeah. I never forgot a time I did a video of him mowing the lawn. That was when he was about 18. And I posted it online. And, you know, everybody is like, good job. And there was this one person who put a comment, why do you have the child doing that work? Why do you have the special child doing that work in the hot sun? I'm like, what? Because I have a real problem. I like that word special all the time until I realize what the label, what people use the label to mean.
Yeah.
You know? So when they said that, I was like, I just responded. I said, this is an 18-year-old responsible adult.
Yeah.
And he lives here. So he has chores.
He
like
has chores to do, yeah.
You know, and well, they didn't respond because I don't know what their children do. Because I grew up that, you know, once you live in here, you have to function. When I started to work, I had to put money towards the house.
Yeah.
And I even have friends, they even asked me, you know, these are, my friends have no, their children do not have disabilities.
Yeah.
You know, and they would be like, Glenn, how you can get Tyrese to do all them things? Mow the lawn, wash the car, thing. I'm like, I don't understand their question because when they tell me that the car get the son to do anything, I can't understand that because as far as I'm concerned, where does he live?
Yeah.
You know, because if I am asking my son to do something and he doesn't want to do it, well, fine. Look, the gate.
There.
You know, I'm using my suitcase. You can use some garbage box, pay clothes in it, and you get to step in, bro. I did my job. I bring it this far.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to be responsible and, you know, and be accountable and all of that, yeah, you can go and find your way.
Yeah.
And that would have been, Tyrese is lucky he has Down syndrome, but look at that. You know, I don't have to do that with him because from since he was small growing up, right, when I found out that I was actually inhibiting his progress by doing everything for him.
Yeah.
And I stopped doing that. And I started to teach him to do everything, you know, from to make up his bed as soon as he gets up in the morning, you know, to put away his toys as soon as he's finished playing with them, to take his wares to the sink after he's finished eating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not, so he got accustomed to that. So we don't even have to ask him to do it.
Yeah, to do it.
In fact, I kind of like the fact that I can sit down by the table and have lunch and then he say, you finished, Dad? And he come and he take my plate for me. I don't have to say, yo, carry this in the kitchen for me.
Yeah.
I don't have to do that. He'll come and take it.
And take it.
And carry it and wash it for me, you know, because he was brought up like that.
Mm-hmm. And that's where it started. It started from small. So once you start to instill those values in them from small, when they grow up, you don't have to come and repeat it again.
Exactly. And you don't have to use any kind of enforcement either, you know, to do it. And that is the mistake that a lot of parents with children with disabilities don't do.
Mm.
Because, you know, you keep thinking that I have to take care of them.
Mm.
They're special. I have to take care of them. And that keeps you from challenging them.
Yeah.
From letting them learn. Let them make mistakes. You know, when the earlys, when like parents would say, no, I wouldn't let them wash wares, they might cut their hand with a knife, they might break something.
Yeah.
I have broken more glasses and plates. Not, I can't even say throughout my lifetime.
Lifetime.
I mean, from just the period since Tyrese was born to now, Dan Tyrese.
Wow.
and all the time he's washing, you know, doing dishes, and I have broken more things. He had a smartphone since he was about 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
We never had to change the face. I don't have to tell you how many faces I have had to change on my phones from dropping them.
Mm-hmm.
And we never had to do that with him.
With him.
You know, so I'm like, look at that. You know, just look at that. And before I even got him the phone, I remember stopping him from picking up my phone, stopping him from using anything because, hey, yo, that's not a toy.
Yeah.
Don't touch it, don't think, unless I give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Until I went to a conference, tell you that those conferences are really, that experience really changed me. And I was standing in the lobby, you know, talking to another parent, and I saw a parent passing with his daughter in a stroller, and she was on the phone. So I said, well, that can't be his phone, because it was what you all call bejeweled. I
mean,
the phone was like a rhinestone factory. And I said, excuse me. I said, is that your daughter's phone? He said, yeah, that's an iPhone. And he said, she said that, well, she was 3 and a half. She said that she's had one since she was 2. And then he pulled out his iPhone and he handed it to her. Now she rests on his, went on his phone to where the apps are, and continued playing the game she was playing. She was 3 and a half years old.
What?
So that is when it hit me. And I wasn't letting my son at 11 and 12 years old touch my phone. So you know, for any time I got back to Trinidad, I got him his own phone.
Yeah, one time, yeah.
Yeah, I got him his own phone. I was like, oh, come on. Like, seriously? So we really very effectively as parents, sometimes we, you know, how they say sometimes we are our own problem. Yeah, well, in some of the cases, definitely so. Wow. And then you see the difference with the parents that are show more initiative. You see the difference in their kids.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. You know, we have parents in the network, as I say, their children cook and clean and do all sorts of things. It's just incredible.
Wow. Now, guys, don't forget you can call us. You can send us a message. You can call us at 627-3223 or 625-2257. We are discussing World Down Syndrome Day. It's happening tomorrow. I know a lot of schools, a lot of even adults, they wear these socks to represent and, you know, to give that kind of encouragement to persons who have Down syndrome. Now, I call it Niles, that's just the first name that coming up in my head, right? Now, you mentioned these conferences in the States or away. Do you have any of those conferences down here?
No, you didn't just ask me that.
I just did.
No. Where have you been?
But probably under a rock.
Oh, definitely. Because just how you said, for years we've been rocking our socks. For years, since inception, we've had an international conference at the Hyatt every year for World Down Syndrome Day. And it's interesting how God works, how the universe works, you know, depending on what you believe, right? When we launched the network, it was incorporated in 2011. And then every time we were planning the launch, we kept putting it off.
Right.
Because I was like, we need to launch at the Hyatt. And they're like, how are we launching at the Hyatt? We have no money. You know, we have no sponsorship or nothing. We just came together. I said, we have to launch at the Hyatt. I said, people must, you know, when you launch with a certain standard, people pay attention.
Ah, true.
And they have to know that we came out here to make a difference.
Yeah.
And we have to set that bar high and keep it high. You know, so every time the launch just kept putting off. And in September in 2011, the United Nations proclaimed the 21st of March as World Down Syndrome Day. So when we got out news, we were like, okay, we have our launch date, the 21st of March.
So you see.
And we launched on the 21st of March, 2012, at the Hyatt.
Wow.
And the president and the liaison officer for Latin America and Caribbean from the National Down Syndrome Congress in the U.S. attended the launch.
Wow.
See? Yeah.
We get on a call. Let's see who's there. Hi, good afternoon. You're live?
Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, afternoon. Welcome.
And good afternoon to the gentleman, your guest there.
Good afternoon.
Now, the sad thing about this country that we live in, people really do have no sort of empathy towards people who have like any sort of disability in this country. And the sad thing about it, the people who are in charge of being part of trying to make the lives of these people, and especially the parents who have to take care of children who are with disabilities and things, it's only when you see like the day come that we had to recognize something of this and how important it is, then we try to pay attention towards it. Today, I had somebody come in asking for donation towards the same thing. Their child was a disabled and they had to get some finances to do some operation for the child. And, you know, for people now who have, now people don't understand the kind of demand it is to raise somebody who is disabled. Mm. And, you know, when you go to these organizations that present themselves as supposed to be helping out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if this was some bacchanal situation, you'd get called non-stop, eh? But you would realize that nobody would be calling to try to extend, the sympathies towards this situation.
So what you're saying is that it don't get enough recognition.
They don't get recognition. The organization that's supposed to be helping people with children who have disabilities, I think it don't exist. It's just like a rubber stamp organization that presents itself, and they would come and say, well, we're doing this and thing. But when you interact with people with children that are disabled. You realize that, you know.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks for your contribution. Ooh. And he have a point because you don't hear much about it. It's just about 420, guys. Now, Neil, how can the public best support the mission of the Down Syndrome Family Network?
All right. I'll feed off of what the caller just said, you know, because I always say it all the time. We live in a non-caring society.
Mm.
So he's right. He's also right with regard to what I mentioned before. We also live in a charitable, we stuck in our charitable model of taking care of people with disabilities. So all we look at is the handouts. So even the parents, that's all they accept, the handouts. Yeah. They don't want more because they feel they can't get more.
Mm.
That's why I speak a really different language, and you know, some people don't understand. They feel I'm being unrealistic.
Yeah.
You know, because I wanted more for my son, and I still want more for him and all the other young adults with and children coming up with Down syndrome, with autism, you know, with cerebral palsy, because they can do more.
Yeah.
A person who is visually impaired doesn't have to just weave baskets. You know, there's this guy, he's a sound engineer. There's another one, he's a info technician. I worked with two people who are visually impaired, and they did the same job I was doing, you know, as a disability affairs specialist.
Yeah.
They did the same, doing research online and everything. So that's what I talk about with regard to opportunities. And why I say we live in a non-caring society is because of the fact that children with disabilities are segregated, are hidden, and people can't see them. Then the average citizen in Trinidad and Tobago, just like me, they're not exposed to them.
Yeah.
So when you come to me asking me for help, whether it's financial, whether it's technical or otherwise, the first thing I'm thinking, okay, they want some money, right? Give them some money. That's it. Or say, well, where's the child? Well, put them in this home.
Yeah.
Not only the parent don't want to put the child in a home.
Yeah.
They'd prefer to get in a school.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the schools are saying, oh, the teacher's not trained, that this not happening, we are focused on saying all what the problems are.
Mm.
You know, as he said, it's very difficult for a parent. I mean, people, I don't keep going through what I went through, you know, because I guess it made me who I am.
Yeah.
And I just didn't give up because I had a vision.
Mm-hmm.
My son's future have to be better. Mm-hmm. And it have to be better here in Trinidad and Tobago. I'm not going to try to carry him to the States or to Canada where he could get it better. Why we can't do it here?
Yeah.
If they could do it across there, we are not swinging on vines.
Mm, true.
You know, we're not in no jungle. We are not no third world country where we can't understand. We top courses. When we go away to study, we graduate with honors.
Yeah.
So whatever they're doing out there, we could do here.
We could do it here.
You know?
We have a next call. Let's use there. Hi, good afternoon. You're live.
Hi, Kari.
Hey, afternoon.
Yes, hi, Kari. Up my lane. And to the gentleman there, his name is Niles.
Niles, yes. Yeah,
Neil,
thank you. Yeah, Glenn Niles.
Glenn Niles, right. Right, Glenn. First we had to start. I being a recipient of getting disabled, because you don't know what will ever happened to you, eh?
Exactly.
And a lot of the things that he said, Carrie, is true. First, he had to start with the organization lobbying in a proper way. If you are receiving a disability grant, as a, because every disability is different, Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
You are not entitled to work or to go into other endeavors to try to make a dollar because your grant could be pulled back from you.
Oh.
Now, these are things that people don't know. So it's like a carrot on a stick. So you want someone, as Glenn said, to be independent, right? But yet still you want them to exist on a $2,000 grant. If someone has the ability to get themselves employed or skilled in many ways, because everybody's disability is different, why they can't still hold on to $2,000? Why it has to be taken away from them? Because jobs intend sometimes not to work out or to work out, and it's a cumbersome process to get it back.
Mm.
So there's a lot of things that with any disabled, because we saw disability. I have friends who have disabled children, and they are hidden them away from society.
Mm.
They're one of the 22, 22 years old, just home, they're lying down, mute. So people see this. You see, to end your career, it has to start with the people in authority taking that lead, that just become more. A lot of them are disabled children and disability don't discriminate, no carry.
Mm, true.
And now there's plenty of children that are being born with autism.
Hmm.
If they, plenty of the parliamentarians have these disabled children, look at that, and relatives. But the lead, but what a lot of us do, because we are society, we built upon shame, we intend to push them away and hide them away from society. Instead, they try to empower. And until we reach that stage where we mature and don't see this disability as the end of the world,
mm-hmm.
and that we could strengthen and improve situations and people, we will continue hiding them away from the world and feeling that, hey, here we're going on. $2,000, that good for you?
Mm-hmm.
You go and go if you had no basket, you go down so, you go up Santa Cruz and hide, or wherever, and then we could see push you around when that time reaches.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, but they could empower in different ways. But brother, you say shoot, brother. You can take a lot of guts to do that. I tell the Trinidadian, mm-hmm. straight shame.
Yeah.
So, you will know that, brother Niles, but you
definitely.
Say something as a soul there, you're a soul there.
Thanks so much, Neil. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And you have a point.
Yeah, but he's right. He's right, everything he said, and especially, and this comes to bear with our main mandate, which is legislation for persons with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
You see, everybody say we don't need legislation, we need more awareness. Awareness will not make me want to put ramps in my building for somebody with a physical disability to access,
yeah.
or somebody with an intellectual or visually impaired to access information on the internet.
Mm.
You know, I have to make it accessible. You know, if it doesn't have legislation, and it's up to my wills and fancies when I choose to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And as he said, when we are mature enough, there will never be mature enough.
Mm-hmm.
There have been other organizations who have been working very hard for over 60 years and nothing has changed.
Mm-hmm.
That maturity isn't going to come just so. And that's where we need. At some point, you always need legislation.
Yeah.
Look, seatbelts save lives, right? Everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
How many people were dying in accidents because they were not wearing seatbelts until they brought the legislation to bear?
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the statistics now, it's considerably reduced.
Yeah.
Why? You didn't think that people cared about their own lives before to put on the seatbelt? So if they don't care about their own lives, what do you think they'll care about? People with disability who have a child.
They wouldn't care.
Especially where they don't even see them.
Yeah.
They don't care. They really would not care. And they will feel they do their good by contributing to some fund,
mm-hmm.
or something. And as far as they are done, that's my responsibility as a citizen of Trinidad and Tobago. Mm. But your responsibility does not stop there.
Mm.
Any one of us can become disabled at any point in time.
Yeah.
And it should be in our interest to ensure that people with disabilities, that their rights are not being infringed, that they are not being discriminated against,
mm.
so that if, God forbid, I end up in that position, I will have my human rights as a citizen.
Still, yeah, and you're
still
correct.
And intact. You know, where children are supposed to be educated, they are supposed to be integrated, and they are supposed to be employed once they can do so.
Yeah.
You know, we come up with all the excuses. Oh, they will be bullied in school. Yeah, well, fix the bullying problem. Oh, the teachers are not trained. Well, train the teachers. What do you have to do to ensure that the teachers can do the jobs that they are being paid for?
Yeah.
What do you have to do to ensure that the school social system could combat bullying?
Mm.
You know, and if you know, our brain is the most brilliant computer, but we ask the wrong questions.
True.
Because we never ask what we can do.
Mm. We just look at all the wrong things.
Yeah, and I will look at Carol, I'll look at you and say, tell you all the things you're not doing.
Yeah.
But I will never start thinking, what can I do to help you?
Yeah.
We never do that. You know, and all we have to do is start asking ourselves the right questions. I always say that every ministry has some very experienced, qualified academically, mm-hmm. technical officers. You know what a technical officer is supposed to be doing, right? And yet sometimes you wonder why they struggle with finding solutions to problems. And they are doing all these nice reports with all these statistics all the time being submitted, and nothing is ever being done.
Mm-mm.
You know, because we really don't focus on solutions.
Yeah. But Glenn, it's just about 4:30, and this is where we wrap up the conversation. Last question is, what message would you like to share on World Down Syndrome Day, and how can you be reached? Is there any social media handles, your number, an email address? Tell us.
Yeah, our social media handles at Down Syndrome Family Network. You'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn. You know, we are all there. Yeah. I don't know about the TikTok thing, but we have people handling that, you know. Yeah, so we are there. The telephone number is 480-4026, 480-4026. And you can message us through all the other social media network. Tomorrow is United Nations World Down Syndrome Day. Everybody come out, rock your socks. Remember the why. It's not just a fashion statement.
Mm-hmm.
It was so Down Syndrome International, they started the initiative, and they are based in the UK. The socks, when you put them next to each other, they look like chromosomes.
Right.
And they are multicolored. So, you know, chromosomes are multicolored. So that's why they use the multicolored socks.
Mm.
By wearing mismatched multicolored socks, you know, of course, your peers will be looking at your socks like, What are you dressed in the dark? What's going on with you? Yes, especially if you're accustomed going to work in heels and now you have on socks and heels.
Mm.
Okay, you trying to start a new trend here?
Yeah.
And then you can explain, oh, this is an observance of World Down Syndrome Day, you know, and letting everybody know about the potential of persons with Down Syndrome if given the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all about creating more awareness. Because since we started with the network, a lot of parents never used to bring out their kids, as you say, used to hide them away. And now a lot more people are bringing out their kids. I'll go to the mall and you'll see parents shopping with their kids.
Yeah.
That never used to happen when I was growing up, man. You're seeing that at all.
Yeah.
Right? And parents used to tell us that, no, I don't want to care with my kids. Everybody's be staring at me. You know, especially parents of kids with autism who have sensory issues, you know, where the light or sound or something will drive them crazy and they'll start to act out. You know, so parents, they're embarrassed. I say, no, let them go. Let people know they have autism. Let people know they have sensory issues.
Yeah.
Let people understand. Because if they don't know, they don't care.
They don't care. True. Right. Wow. But Glenn, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I really wish we had more time because there are a lot of things I wanted to ask you as well. And this has been an eye-opener because a lot of us, and I'm saying us as in listeners all over, myself, there are things that we don't know about it. And it goes more than just going on Google and Googling it. You know, when we hear firsthand the experiences and all the challenges that you face, it's an eye-opener. So I want to thank you so much for joining us here at Freedom 106.5 FM. I hope we can get you back to talk more about the Down Syndrome Family Network. I don't know what went over my eyes there now. So we have Glenn Naz. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope to see you here again.
Yeah, and thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.